Well, good morning, everyone. It's nice to have you here today. Nice on a beautiful Sunday to come in here and to worship with our fellow Christians. It takes a lot to keep a place like this going. There's people who come in here and they'll mop. There's people who come in here and they'll clean up. They'll vacuum the floors. They hang blinds and they do all these wonderful things. Well, the downstairs got painted. If you haven't been downstairs in the fellowship hall, which is now has a sign on it, which is cool, all right? It got painted. I walked in and this is beautiful. It's airy. It's white. It's gorgeous. So I'm not going to name names, but I bet you can figure out who to pat on the back for that. And it's wonderful that people love this place enough that they take the time to do these kind of things. Because it's part that makes it all wonderful for us. So when you go down there, notice, it's great. It's light, it's airy, it's wonderful. I don't know about you, but I like to know when new stuff, what they do. I was walking down the hall at work the other day. So there was a vendor sitting in the corner with a new machine. So I stepped up. What does this machine do? And she starts to explain it to me. Well, it does this, 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 and this. They make machines now basically idiot-proof. She goes, here's the on button. Boop. All you got to do is turn it on. Here's a cord. You stick it in here. Boop. It only goes in one way. You know that? Remember that little game that had the triangles and the circles and the squares and the red and the blue sides? And it can only go in one hole, right? Here's the probe. Boop. Only goes in one place. Once you get it plugged in, you hand it to the doctor. It's preset. All you got to do. It's my kind of machine, right? It's the kind of machine that you don't have to know a lot about it. You get it done. And we like to know about things. If somebody tells us something is important, we like to know how to work it. Jesus said in Matthew 5:20, "For I say unto you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven." So it's important to us. We think about it. We think, well, what does it mean to be righteous? What does it mean to us when we say, when we read in the scriptures, well, you know, it's important to be a righteous person. Because apparently righteousness matters. God told Noah, right, in Genesis 7:1, "Then the Lord said to Noah, come into the ark, you and all your household, because I have seen that you are righteous before me in this generation." What a wonderful compliment to Noah. That he was righteous before an entire people. When you go back and you read the account of the ark and the flood and Noah and everything, the people were as bad as they ever were going to be. We think of our time as terrible. No, no, no. You go back and read Genesis 6. Those people are described as being continually, every thought that entered into their mind was evil. Every thought. Solomon, when he was discussing the times there in Ecclesiastes 3, remember there's a time for love, there's a time for hate, there's a time to sow, there's a time to reap, there's a time to gather together stones, there's a time to cast away stones. Right? It's a beautiful song, right? I can't remember who made it into a song. But right after that, in Ecclesiastes 3:17, it says, "I said in my heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked. For there is a time there for every purpose and for every work." Solomon was recognizing the fact that the righteous and the wicked will both be judged. And Jesus said it's important to be righteous. Peter quoted the Psalms in 1 Peter 3:12 and said, "For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil." Do you want the Lord's face against you? Absolutely not. May the Lord lift his countenance upon us, right? May the Lord look at us with favor and grace because we're righteous people. So when we often talk about that, when we look at a word like righteous, we can look into a dictionary, we can look into a lexicon and see the word is dikonos. But we can look and say, well, that's one person who keeps the laws of God or man. When you go the speed limit down the highway, you're being a righteous person, according to the Alabama state law. I won't be righteous going on the way home. Right? But when you do this, you're being a righteous person. So what does it mean when we say, well, you need to keep the laws of God? I ran a race yesterday. It was like a mud run, right? And you're going through up and down all these obstacles. You know how I can prove to you that I ran that race? My knees are skinned up pretty bad. I can't hardly get my arms over my head. I've got a medal now. I can walk around. I got a medal. We're running this race. It's so much easier if you want to know what something looks like. Don't define it. Show it to me. Just like that machine. She was like, boop, turn it on. Boop, stick in the probe. Hand the probe to the doctor. All you got to do, show me. And I will understand. With that in mind, turn your Bible over to Psalm 15. Because David shows us something in Psalm 15 that's very, very important. He starts off and he says, Lord, who may abide in your tabernacle? Who may dwell in your holy hill? Now, when he says about who may abide in your tabernacle and who may dwell on your holy hill, you know, the questions he's really asking is who from the outside can come in? Who on the outside can come in and dwell with you? When you're talking about that, you're actually saying, Lord, I want to come in and be where you are. I want to be one of the people who is in your very presence. And David's asking that question, who may abide in your tabernacle? Who might dwell on your holy hill? Both these ideas of abide and dwell have an idea of permanence behind them, have an idea of concreteness behind them that we want. And then David goes on to describe this very person. And not in the minutiae of the details, but in the overall idea about what he sees in this person as they are, who is dwelling in the tabernacle of God, in the very house of God. He says there in verse 2, he who walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. You know, these characteristics undergird a person who is upheld by their integrity. He's upheld by his integrity into such a fashion that we understand that a tree is noted by its fruits, right? I mean, we get that. We look at an apple tree and we expect apples. We look at a lime tree and we expect limes, right? We look at a bologna tree and expect bologna. Never mind, it's not a bologna tree. Jesus understood this, right? Luke 6:45. A good man out of the good treasures of his heart brings forth good, and an evil man out of the evil treasures of his heart brings forth evil. For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaks. James says the very same thing. When you go over to James 1:13 and 14, it says, let no one say when he's tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is driven away or drawn away by his own desires and enticed. When we think about this person who walks uprightly, who works righteousness, who speaks the truth in his heart, it's telling us, I got to tell myself the truth. We sometimes put on a nice mask, don't we? We sometimes put on an idea that, you know, have you seen the commercial where the lady's standing behind the mask? And sometimes we have the mask in front of us the whole time, and we're afraid to take the mask off because we don't want people to see the truth. But if you keep the mask on in your own heart, how in the world can you not be truthful to yourself? How in the world can you not be saying, well, yeah, I know that I should not have done. Yeah, I know sometimes I open my mouth and foot goes in. And I have to understand that I have to take responsibility for that. I have to take responsibility for that. In Proverbs 4:23 it says, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it springs the issues of life. You want to know how you feel about something? How do you feel inside? How do you feel inside? And you see what he's doing here, right off the bat? He's saying, who's going to dwell on God's holy hill? Well, you know, it's got something to do with who you are inside. It has something to do with who you are from your very core of your being. And then he goes on to say in verse 3, he who does not backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up reproach against his friend. So now look, it's starting to extend, right? This person of integrity, this person of thoughtfulness, of righteousness, is starting to extend to another person's acquaintances. It's moving from inside to outside. If you turn your Bible over to James 3, verses 1 through 12, it's going to say something about taming the tongue. The tongue is a little bitty member, but it does such great evil. Just like one spark will start a huge fire. Just like a small rudder drives a huge ship. If you want to write something worthwhile in your Bible, right there at James 3, verses 1 through 12, jot down in the corner of your Bible, never miss the opportunity to shut up. That's what I've got written in mine. I guess I need to read it more often, right? Because sometimes I don't. But we think about that, and we think about the fact that what he's talking about is I do no evil to my... I don't speak against my neighbor. My integrity, I'm giving away to somebody else. I'm telling the truth. Isn't that exactly the second greatest commandment, right? Didn't he say that? What's the greatest commandment? You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, all your spirit. And the second is like unto it, that you will love your neighbor as yourself. If you're willing to be honest and truthful about who you are, why can't you be honest and truthful about the people around you? Ephesians 4:29 says, "Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the heart, grace to the hearers." Grace to the hearers. In the Proverbs it says, a kindly word is like apples of gold and settings of silver. Never miss the opportunity to say something nice to somebody if you have a chance. That's what he's talking about there. In Galatians 6:10, it says, "Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially those of the household of faith." Why? Because we want to extend our integrity to other people. And that's what David's trying to say. He's trying to show us this person, this nice guy, right? You keep going on in verse 4, it says, by the first half of verse 4, it says, "And those in whose eyes a vile person is despised, but he honors those who fear the Lord." The integrity of this righteous person, which he's starting to extend, right? This integrity of the righteous person also includes seeing and acknowledging morals. Not like today's society. That's not what we do in today's society. People don't want you to acknowledge their morals or their lack of morals. They want you to acknowledge the fact that what I do is good regardless of what you think. And that's not quite right. That is not quite right. In Psalms 1:1 it says, "Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of the sinner, nor sits in the seat of the scornful." Notice the progression. To walk, to stand, to sit. Getting comfortable enough to stay there with the scornful. That's not us. And the only way you can do that is if you recognize something when it is wrong. That's what Jesus said, right? We'll know a tree by its fruits. You're allowed to judge. Don't let anybody ever tell you you're not. They'll throw Matthew chapter 7 verse 1 in your face in a heartbeat. And then ignore Matthew chapter 7, verse 2, which says, "For with what you judge, you will also be judged. Judge with righteous judgment." The judgment of the Scriptures will never be wrong. Never be wrong. No matter what people like to say to us. In 1 Peter 4:4, it says, "In regard to these, they think it strange that you do not run with them to the same flood of dissipation." The NIV has recklessness and wild living. And not only do they think, when you're standing there and you say, "No, I don't do that," do they think, you know, they wag their tongue at you, right? They speak evil of you for not doing the same thing they do. And the reason is because if you did, it would justify them in their actions. And the fact that you don't do those things speaks against them. God has always honored His people. In Deuteronomy 14:2, it says, "For you are a holy people to the Lord your God, and the Lord has chosen you to be a people to Himself, a special treasure above all peoples who sit on the face of the earth." He honors us. He raises us up. He increases our weights. That's what the word honor comes from. To increase in weight. When we say we honor the judge, we increase his weight. And we should do the same. Philippians 2:3. "Let nothing that be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself." In other words, we give people weight. We give them honor. We let the weight go to them instead of ourselves. Have you ever heard the little acronym JOY? When you pray, pray with joy. It's easy enough. Jesus, others, yourself. Some people will talk about five fingers and how they work. Jesus, others, yourself. We're always putting ourselves last. Let's put the weight on somebody else. And then David says in the last half of verse 4, "He who swears to his own hurt and does not change." Right? He who swears to his own hurt and does not change. Here is where your integrity, your tires of integrity, meet the road. Meet the road. Because sometimes when you say things, have you ever opened your mouth and said something, and then you either had to, one, eat your words, or you had to live up and do something that you knew you didn't want to do in the first place? Have you seen the little kitchen magnet? "Lord, help my words be sweet today, for I might have to eat them tomorrow." There's truth in that. There's truth in that. But we swear to our, do not change, even to our own hurt. Here is, let your yes be yes. Let your no be no. And this is more than just about talking about taking an oath. This is being about somebody of integrity. About standing forth and saying, "Yes, I am a Christian. Yes, I do believe in the truth. No, I'm not going to compromise just so I can get along. Why should I? There's no reason to compromise just so I can get along." Paul preached the gospel knowing the danger, didn't he? Jesus went through his life knowing the outcome. Knowing the danger he was going to face for you and me. And yet he still did it. Talk about integrity. And therein lies the key. "Not my will, but thy will be done, Lord." Not my will, but thy will be done. It's the only way you can really keep that integrity. But David continues. In verse 5 he says, "He who does not put out his money at usury, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent." Nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. So there's a question in there, right? Is this an injunction against those who have wealth and power? Influence and life? The people who have stuff that they go through and they have these gifts that have been given to them and that they ignore the have-nots? Is this an injunction against having power? No. But it's certainly an injunction against abusing power. Turn your Bible over to James 5. James 5, 1 through 6, it says this, "Come now, you rich, weep and howl for your miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches are corrupted and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and your silver are corroded and their corrosion will be a witness against you, and you will eat your flesh like fire. You have heaped up treasure in the last days. Indeed, the wages of the laborers who have mowed your fields, which you've kept back by fraud, cry out. And the cries of the reapers have reached the ears of the Lord of the Sabbath. You have lived on the earth in pleasure and luxury. You have fattened your hearts as in the day of slaughter. You have condemned, you have murdered the just, and he did not resist you." There's the wealthy person who puts his trust in his wealth, not his trust in God. The wealthy person who puts his money out for usury. The person who does take advantage of his fellow man to their detriment. I'm not talking about making a profit. I'm not talking about using your money wisely. I'm talking about using your money as a weapon. Using your goods as a weapon. And that's what he's talking about here. Putting your money out at usury or taking a bribe against an innocent person. In Galatians, Paul remembers a meeting that he and Barnabas had, right, with the apostles in Jerusalem. The outcome of which was, when they talked, in Galatians 2:10, he records it. He says, "They desired only that we should remember the poor, the very thing I was eager to do, to remember the poor." John pretty much says the same thing in 1 John 3:17 to 18. "But whosoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in needs and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? My little children, let not love this in the word or do not love in word or tongue, but in deed and in truth." If one thing is for sure from this, spirituality and generosity live in the same heart. They live in the same heart. Because that's what we see from our Father in heaven. A spiritual being that is generous enough to give us everything we could ever want. David finishes up right there in Psalm 15, this last little line here. "He who does these things shall never be moved. He who does these things, he who walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart, he who does not backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up a reproach against his friends, in whose eyes the vile person is despised, but he honors those who fear the Lord. He who swears to his own hurt and does not change, he who does not put his money out at usury, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent, they shall never be moved." From where? "Lord, who may abide in your tabernacle? Who may dwell in your holy hill?" That's where I want to abide in the tabernacle of God. I want to dwell in his tents. I want to take my place on the holy hill. Don't you? Who will be God's guest? Eddie Kloher put it this way in his commentary on Psalms. "His character is true. His words are restrained, his allegiance is clear, and his dealings are honorable." That's pretty straightforward. He who does these things shall never be moved. Never be moved. This is the promise that has been given to us. If you do these things, you will not be shaken. Proverbs 10:25 says, "When the whirlwind passes by, the wicked is no more, but the righteous has an everlasting foundation." Oh, the wise man built his house upon the rock. The wise man built his house upon the rock. Right? The wise man built his house upon the rock. And the rains came tumbling down. Are you the wise man? Are you the foolish man? And this house goes split. Where are you going to make your dwelling? You have to make a choice. The rocks or the sand? If there's any way we can help you make the choice, if you have questions about the choice, we are here to help. We want to help. We will sit. We'll say a prayer with you. You want to learn a little bit more about what it means to become a Christian? We'll talk about it. We'll help you. If there's any way we can help, just let it snow as we stand and sing this song.
"Have thine affections been nailed to the cross? Is thy heart right with God? Dost thou count all things for Jesus but lost?